You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
And with that, a good morning to the great guru of history.
Good morning, Zeb.
Dr. History.
How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. Sun shining. Looks like it's going to be a nice week today.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It is.
Do you have any thank yous today?
I haven't heard from anybody this week.
Oh.
It's kind of unusual. Usually I hear at least from one or two.
They call you old Lonesome Ken.
Yeah. Just sitting there looking at my computer hoping I get an email.
I'll send you one so you don't feel left out.
Okay. All right. So, Zeb, we're going to head up to Alaska today.
I don't want to go up there.
Well,
it's cold.
It is. And we'll talk a little about that cold.
Okay.
So this happened in 1861.
Okay. About the year you were born.
Right about there. Yeah. Just after you were born. So 1861, America stretched a telegraph wire from the East Coast, from the Atlantic States, to California. So now the nation was eager to be connected to Europe. Now, unfortunately, their first attempt to lay a telegraph wire across the Atlantic Ocean had failed. So they tried it, but it, whatever reason, it didn't work. But the notion of laying wire across that big body of water was feeling more and more far-fetched to the engineers.
What are you talking about wire? I mean, what
the cable,
how big
the
of a cable was it?
You know, I've only seen pictures, but it looks like it's about as big as your arm. Just a big, thick, maybe a foot, I don't know.
And so what they tried to do and lay across the ocean, it failed, right?
Yeah, whatever they tried initially did not work. So they started turning to look at the Pacific Ocean, which was less than 60 miles wide in the Bering Strait, from what is now Alaska over to Siberia.
Uh-huh.
So then they figured, okay, well, we can stretch a wire across that part of the ocean over to Siberia and then overland to Europe. Because they know they could have a wire that was stretched, well, obviously went all across the United States from east to west. So in August of 1865, a guy named Major Robert Kennicott stepped off a ship at the mouth of the Yukon River. He was only 30 years old, kind of a frail guy. He wore a Western Union Telegraph Company expedition uniform. Kind of unusual, he wore Indian moccasins on his feet with this uniform. Now, Kennicott was kind of a nervous guy. He was rushing back and forth while his supplies were unloaded onto the beach, and he'd purchased a lot of stuff in San Francisco, and this all was shipped up to Alaska.
What about the cable?
Well, not yet. They're not. They're just getting ready for that. Okay, so, but he was kind of a suspicious, paranoid kind of guy. He was worried that his crew was cheating him. Did they want the mission to fail? Were his men out to kill him? He had all these thoughts going through his mind.
Well, sounds like he was living life in the rear view mirror.
Nervous lane.
Yeah.
But before he set out, the Western Union Telegraph Company had contracted with Russia to lay wire in Russian America, which is now Alaska. It was considered Russian America.
And the Russians the other day, they want it back.
In addition, the Canadian government had granted permission to lay American telegraph wire in Western Canada.
Hmm.
So once all the paperwork was signed, the pressure was on to complete the line quickly. Western Union knew it was only a matter of time before another company would succeed with the transatlantic line. So they were trying to hurry and get this done. Now, this Robert Kennicott was quickly hired as the chief of the company's Russian-American division. That's what they called it. So the goal, again, was to get it from America through what is now Alaska, across the Bering Strait to Russia.
And then?
And then over to Europe.
And then I got to ask this question.
Okay.
Have you ever thought, while you were doing this study on this program, how and how big those cable rolls were?
Oh, you know, again, I've seen pictures of them on ships where they're unrolling it out into the ocean. And
what would one cable roll be like?
I don't know, mile, 2 miles?
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe, I don't know.
I wonder what the company name was that made and manufactured that cable.
And there again, I don't know, because actually, you'll see, we didn't even get that far.
Really?
Yeah. So this Robert Kennicott was selected because he was the only United States citizen known to have traveled the Yukon River. He actually had canoed across western Canada, including a few hundred miles of the Yukon River. He had also spent a full winter in cold, remote Fort Yukon. So these credentials were enough for Western Union to figure he was the man for the job. So in San Francisco, Western Union hired over 40 men to accompany Kennicott and handle the telegraph work. Some were truly kind of lazy, but Kennicott distrusted all of them. He didn't trust any of them. He was sure that his second in command was slowing things down to make him look bad to the company. So the Expedition Scientific Corps was solely Kennicott's idea. As head of that group, he chose 6 scientists. Now, that may sound a little strange to ask for 6 scientists,
yeah,
but they were set to explore when and where they chose, taking notes, collecting samples, while he stayed near the ship.
I got to ask you a dumb question.
Okay.
Now, they put a lot of the cable underwater.
Right.
But did they also have to trench and bury the cable on...
We'll get to that.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'll get that to you. So anyway, all the supplies, the provisions and belongings there on the beach, and the crew kind of became worried. You see, Kennicott had not brought enough food to feed an expedition of 50 men for at least a year.
Oh, my God.
They only had 6,000 pounds of food, and it was mostly flour.
That's not good.
If the men were to labor in this sub-zero weather, they needed a lot more food than that.
Yeah.
And they were afraid it'd be a hungry winter.
They got sick of pizza.
They did. So a Russian trading post, St. Michael, sat where the Yukon River flowed into the Bering Sea. So the expedition set up camp on the beach right there below the blockhouse, which was a Russian guard structure. Kennicott sent half of the men and supplies north. Their mission was to explore the coastline up to where the Bering Strait was so narrow that you could actually see Siberia.
Really?
Okay, and then they were supposed to begin setting telegraph poles in the ground. So no trenching. This was going to be telegraph poles.
So it went from the water to the poles?
It was going to go from the poles into the Bering Strait. Okay, because it was going to come by pole all the way across the United States, Canada.
That's
to,
pretty heavy for those poles.
Yeah. Well, at that point, it wouldn't have been the real heavy one that they would have had in the ocean.
Oh.
Okay. So Kennicott led the other men up this 2,000-mile Yukon River, and they were supposed to locate the ideal telegraph right-of-way, 2,000 miles. Then they, too, were supposed to start setting telegraph poles, beginning at the Canadian end of the Yukon River and working back toward the coast. Hopefully, these two lines would connect at St. Michael. Which was the shortest route across.
You said that was 60 miles.
Across to Siberia. Yeah. So a little river steamboat, the Lizzie Horner, was unloaded from Kennicott's ship at St. Michael. However, there was an essential part that had been left behind.
Uh-oh.
Lizzie's smokestack.
What's that?
The smokestack on the steamboat.
They forgot it?
They forgot it.
How do you do that?
I don't know. But that missing piece had to be made from scrap metal before she could be fired up. So Lizzie's proved to be kind of a fussy steamer. She broke down at the worst times. The crew moved very slowly up the Yukon River that fall. Kennicott hated the slowness, and I said he was paranoid. He suspected his crew was tampering with the steamboat.
Uh-huh.
And after the Yukon River froze over, the steamboat Lizzie was useless. They left it behind.
So then what did they do?
Well, after the crew left, after they left the boat, Kennicott needed to hire Russian-speaking Alaskan guides. All right, the Americans would now travel into the Athabascan country, where the only common language was Russian. He didn't speak Russian. So this process was really frustrating for Kennicott, because he found that while the natives were very willing to work, they wanted a whole dollar a day to work.
A whole buck?
A whole dollar. As expedition chief, Kennicott hated to spend so much money for common laborers.
So all the crew that he had, they left?
No, they're still with him. Oh. But he had to hire these other people to help because they needed sleds and dogs.
Holy cow.
So buying sleds and dogs was a challenge, since the native mushers, again, wanted this big money. Well, Kennicott's San Francisco men proved not to be very good dog drivers. Well, they'd never done it before.
Well, neither have you.
It'd be like me and you going out there trying to get dogs to run in the right direction.
Yeah.
So he wondered how he would feed a bunch of husky dogs when he could barely feed his own men.
Another dollar a day.
Whole dollar. Well, think back then, Zeb. You know, I mean, a lot of guys made 25 cents a day.
Oh, my.
You know, back in those 1800s. So
yeah.
A dollar may have been, you know, pretty good. Anyway, it was a harsh winter. The temperature was 30 below zero.
Ooh.
Even so, the camp managed to move up the Yukon River every few weeks. They would get a little farther.
In 30 degrees
below.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So the camp managed to move up the Yukon. They were pleased to see that as they traveled upriver, they found more and larger trees than they had seen on the coast. So some men built some crude huts. The sun shone for only a few hours a day, so they worked mostly by moonlight. And again, 30 below and mostly dark.
And they didn't have the fancy footwear we have today.
No, they didn't have the clothing.
Oh.
But the meals had been reduced to biscuits at breakfast and a dinner of salt meat with biscuits at dinner. And it was hard to keep warm on only two meals a day. I mean, when it's that cold, you've got to have calories.
Yeah.
You know? So here we are.
Us fat people would really be happy up there.
We won't go to that.
Okay.
The spring of 1866 found the group camping at the dilapidated Russian fort called Nulato.
Where did they stay at night?
Well, they built these crude huts. And then they would, after so far, then they'd go up the river farther and build some more crude huts.
Oh, so they kept building housing?
Little, like lean-tos.
Is any of that left today?
Probably not. I doubt it. But over the course of the fall and winter, they had managed to actually travel 550 miles up the Yukon River.
And they had to go 2,000.
Right. So on the morning of May 13th, Kennicott sat down and wrote guidelines for the expedition if he should die. Okay. Now, this note was placed where the crew was sure to find it. He then left this Nulato camp alone. He strolled along the Yukon River. The river ice had been broken, and the snow was patchy in the forest. When Kennicott did not return for dinner, two crewmen went searching for him. They soon found his body on the bank of the river with a peaceful look on his face. One of the men believed that Kennicott's heart had just stopped. The other was sure that Kennicott had committed suicide because he'd left a note in his tent. Okay, there's no evidence to decide the matter for them, and the mystery of his passing remains a mystery today. They really don't know what happened.
Was he the one that was financing this?
No, it was Western Union. He was just an employee, but he was the head man. So anyway, Kennicott had been in Alaska less than 9 months. Ironically, the most time he was able to spend with any of his scientists, remember he took those six scientists? And that occurred when one of them escorted his coffin back to San Francisco.
My goodness.
So, and it took three men to fill Kennicott's shoes. There was a 20-year-old fish expert became the chief of the scientific corps. A company man pushed the Yukon River team to complete their exploration. Another expedition man, a guide, paddled all the way up to the source of the Yukon in Canada to mark the intended route for the line. So they made it the 2,000 miles, but not with Kennicott.
What do you think he did?
I don't know. I think he...
He just walked out on the thin ice and...
No, he was sitting. They found him. I think he just gave up.
Gave up.
Just gave up.
I see.
But the crews worked another entire year traveling slowly and digging into frozen ground. The coastal crew, the other one, was the only Alaska team to erect telephone poles, and then only about 80 miles of it.
Now, are any of those poles left?
I doubt it. I doubt that. I mean, this was, you know, all those years ago. Probably not. So, anyway, so then after they'd done all that work, all that suffering and starving, in the summer of 1867, the Russian-American division learned that a telegraph wire had been laid across an ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. They got beat getting a wire to the
holy to, cow. To all Europe. That work for nothing.
Yeah, so America and Europe were connected, but not by them. So the Western Union Telegraph Company immediately decided it would spend no more money on a Bering Strait line, and the crew was fired. The men dropped their shovels and actually cheered for joy, wouldn't you? After all that.
I'd want to get out of there.
Time.
Did they ever get their money?
I think they did. But there was a second piece of news that went along pretty good, too. America had purchased Alaska from Russia. Remember the Seward?
Yeah.
And they called it Seward's Folly because they got it for what? God, I can't remember. A couple of million dollars.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't much.
Yeah. But, you know, although the dream of this trans-Pacific telegraph line had failed, the expedition was actually a scientific success. The scientific core, those six men, had collected a whole bunch of natural history information. Several expedition naturalists returned to the United States with samples and rough drafts of books. America quickly knew more about the interior of Alaska than Russia ever had. And all of this research took place because Robert Kennicott had insisted on bringing scientists along on this expedition to
Alaska. And he never lived to see any of it.
He never lived to see any of the fruits of that. So, again, the expedition was a failure. But, you know, and again, you think about, you know, the gold rush and the fish, the salmon that Alaska provided. Again, they call it Seward's Folly, but, you know, it was definitely probably one of the best purchases. And let's see, what was it, 1959, I think, when Alaska became a state.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was 1959.
But I'm still going to go back to the cold. I mean, I cannot imagine with the technology and the increases in knowledge about what to wear, packs for your feet, warmer gloves, warmer coats. They didn't have any of this, and they were working in 30 below weather.
Right. Well, think of Sir Ernest Shackleton and his ship, the Endurance, down in the south trying to get to the Antarctic.
Wow.
You know, I don't know if you've heard, but the Endurance, the ship that sunk, Shackleton's ship, they have found it. They've located that ship down in, I think it's called Weddell's Bay. They have actually found it and taken pictures of his ship.
Oh, my.
And that's another story of extreme cold, severe weather. And he never lost a single man.
Really?
They all survived, even though he didn't make it to the South Pole.
You had to be some kind of tough to live that kind of a life.
You know, and we've talked about, you know, the gold miners getting to the Yukon and traveling up the Chilkoot Trail and the Golden Staircase and then down the river to the Yukon. And
But for a dollar a day, I mean, people today, think about that. A dollar a day, if you were lucky.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Down here in the stateside, you know, it was 25 cents a day, maybe.
Wow.
So,
and they had all their clothing and the food and all their accessories on the ship, right?
Right, which wasn't much.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I'm betting that I would think that maybe some of the locals maybe provided them some food, you know, because they knew how to hunt, the Inuits and the various tribes in Alaska. Hopefully, maybe help them.
But to make their lodging, for how long a period of time?
Well, what was it, a year and a half, year?
No, I mean, but they stayed in these cabins.
These little huts.
For how long and then moved on?
Well, I suppose they would go maybe another 20 or 30 miles and then maybe build some more.
Oh, my goodness. So they were going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
I see.
Just to get the scout it out and then decide where to plant the poles. And then they had to cut down the trees for the telegraph poles.
Holy moly. And we think we've got it hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy. But Kennecott, was he any relation to the Kennecott mine?
I don't know that, but I doubt it. I don't know. I can't say that for sure.
Okay.
But, I mean, he died at a very young age, so not married. I don't think he was married or had family.
You got to sit back and think, though, in those days, and you kind of elaborated with Kennecott himself. I mean, the feeling of loneliness and we can't win, there's no hope. I mean, desperation, desolation. Wow, when you're up in that cold country, I wouldn't want to be there.
Well, and the 40 men that were working with him, you know, they'd left family and friends and everything behind. And here they are maybe wondering if they're ever going to see their family again.
Wow.
And Kennecott, same thing. Probably, maybe he got to the point where he decided, I never will see him, and maybe his heart just quit. We don't know.
Wow. So. And what about the rest of the crew? They all made it out, though, right?
Yeah, they were able to get back to San Francisco or wherever.
$1 a day.
And they probably didn't even get that.
My, that's an interesting story, but don't take us back to the cold. I don't want to go back there anymore.
Oh, I've got more stories.
No. We're coming into spring, and we want to think spring, not 30 below.
Okay, maybe we'll go to Arizona or
good place,
Nevada,
my, good. Let's sweat a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.